Good evening. How's everybody doing tonight? Welcome to tonight, Monday, March 2nd, 2026. Our city commission agenda tonight will be, looks like a good one. We might get out of here for dinner. So we're going to get us going here. I'd like to ask Reverend Dorian Harris, St. Paul AME Church, to give us the invocation, and we'll do the pledge.
Let us pray. Oh God, I help in ages past. I hope in years to come. Lord, we come tonight to say thank you for this opportunity to gather together as a family, to consider your work here in this wonderful city. Thank you for calling us here. Thank you for allowing us to serve this wonderful community. And Father, as we consider everything that's going on in this big world of ours, I'm a military brat. You know that, Lord. Born in Anchorage, Alaska. My daddy was in the Air Force. So tonight, I want to lift up all of our servicemen and women who are waiting on orders, either already gone, fighting for us, and fighting for you. Amen. Lord, we pray right now that you would reach into the White House, give our president wisdom, knowledge, and understanding, guide him, lead him. Not only him, I'll be going to Tallahassee this week. Pray for our governor, and also all those who are in the Capitol. Thank you, Lord, once again, for your love for us. Thank you for our mayor and our cabinet here and our team. Thank you for our police chief and our fire chief and all those who serve this wonderful city, for those who work behind the scenes, for those who make this city great. Lord, thank you for them. Once again, wrap your loving arms around us all. As we look at the news, Lord, it's easy to get anxious and to start to worry. But I was taught a long time ago, if you're going to pray, don't worry. And if you're going to worry, don't pray. So tonight we're praying, and once again, we're giving ourselves in this moment to you. We know that you brought us this far. You're not going to leave us now. So once again, Lord, we lift up all of those around us, from our senior citizens to the youngsters in the building. Allow us to get a little closer tonight, because we realize what's important. It's our faith, it's our family, it's my friends, and we can serve this city together, and we can give hope. Lord, we love you today, and we thank you. It's in your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Reverend. Appreciate it.
Oh.
Okay. I'd like to ask City Clerk Linda Bourgeois to call the roll, please.
Mayor Fuller.
Here.
Vice Mayor Daley.
Here.
Commissioner Eden.
Here.
Commissioner Dearman.
Here.
Commissioner Robinson.
Here.
Oh. Okay, now we've got City Manager and City Attorney announcements. We'll start off with City Manager Ryan Levengood.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There will be a blood drive held at City Admin on Wednesday, March 11th, and that will be from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. The next Ridge League of Cities dinner will be held at the Bartow Civic Center, and that will be on Thursday, March the 12th. Social hour starts at 6 p.m. with dinner at 7. Please let the city clerk know if you will be in attendance. Our next city commission meeting will be held on Monday, March 16th, and that will be at 7 p.m. And then also, too, this past weekend, we hosted TEDx in not only Lake Alfred, but the first time in Polk County. And so that was a very successful event, really kind of groundbreaking, all of the speakers, very engaging. The weather cooperated. It was a little bit warmer than I think we had originally anticipated, but the next day it rained. So between the two options, I think we ended up with the better of the two. But thank you for Dr. Price for keeping us in mind. I heard that Polk State had expressed interest. They kind of wanted to take it away from us, but she held the line and kept to her roots in Lake Alfred, and we were able to host it first. Also, thank you to the Parks and Recreation staff, Emily and her crew, for making it above and beyond. Everything was spot on, the red carpet, the hors d'oeuvres, everything really kind of came together, and we got a really good showing and showcase there for the Mackay Preserve and the Mackay House as well. So, very good.
Thank you, sir.
And let's see. Also, too, raise the bar and grill. We had that ribbon cutting. That business has been open well over a month. But this past Saturday, the mayor and several city officials we were able to officially welcome them to the community. And so we're hoping and wishing them much success in the years to come. And then also, too, summer camp will be, registration will be open on March 9th. Hard to believe we're already talking about summer, but here we are. And then also the Lake Alfred Heritage Festival, that's going to be this Saturday, March the 7th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and that'll be right here outside the door in downtown Lake Alfred along East Palmetto Street. And that is all that I have. No other announcements.
Thank you, sir. And now I'd like to ask City Attorney Seth Clater for his words of wisdom.
Only that we remain grateful to represent the great city of Lake Alfred, Mayor.
Thank you, and we're glad to have you, sir. All right. We have a recognition of citizens, our first time we get to do that this evening, and we're going to ask anybody that's got any questions or comments about items that are not on tonight's agenda. If you'd like to make a comment or a question, please feel free to come forward, state your name and your address, and we'll give you a shot. Go ahead.
Good evening.
Good evening.
David Joseph, 864 Griffin Avenue. It's not a comment, but an acknowledgement.
Okay.
Governments often take a lot of rap, bad ones, and rightfully so sometimes. But I have to say that I'm very, very proud of the city of Lake Alfred, our council, and your staff. Our last meeting, if you recall, I brought up some concerns that we had regarding our neighborhood and the lakes involved. And before the week was over, I had a personal call from the city manager. I bet it was like way beyond his normal business hours. And had a good conversation with him, followed up with an email. And I can't say how proud I am of, you know, how he executes his responsibilities as the city manager, him and his staff. So I just wanted to make our citizens aware of that as well, because sometimes, like I said, governments can oftentimes take bad raps, but I'm very proud of the city of Lake Alfred.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
That's why he's best. Is there anybody else that would like to come up? Yes, ma'am. Come on up.
Hi, everybody. My name's Debbie Rabby, and I live in the Lakes, too, which is the Highland Homes Development.
Yes, ma'am.
I live on Melrose Street. It's a lovely development. There's a list of things that the developer has to do for us before they're supposed to turn over the HOA to the homeowners. Mm-hmm. And so I'm requesting that I get a copy of that list so that I can let everybody in the community there know what all the different things are. I have my name and email on the list. I have my list, actually. I'd like to give to somebody at the end. There's a retention pond behind us, and it's eroding, or there's erosion around it. I have some pictures of it that I'd like to share with somebody if I could. So, again, my list. and then there's some sidewalks that are, some of the areas of the sidewalks are, like, crumbling. And okay. They don't pour them all at one time. They do it one house at a time and sections at a time. So there's been some problems with the sidewalks. And these are things that I'd like to not see passed on to the homeowners that I feel like are developer things that they need to do. And if not, just let us know. And then I have a question about the streetlights from where I come from in Minnesota. The city always owned the streetlights, but our streetlights, we found out, are leased by the HOA. So that's getting passed on to the homeowners. Is that how things are done here?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Mayor, if I may, so if the contact list, Linda, if you'll get that, if she, you can just come up and hand us that, and we'll follow up with you. So, generally speaking, so in phase two, so we actually had a meeting with the city attorney today and some of the others and coming up with that punch list. Lake phase two, though, That was done many, many years ago. So the area, the part that's actually getting turned over to the Homeowners Association is Track 6, which is the part that's closest down to the lake. That was the one that had the erosion issue on the canal. So Phase 2, I think that's been homeowner or HOA operated for many, many years now. But I'll be happy to look at the list and see, you know, some of that stuff may be city responsibility on the sidewalks and things like that. So we'll look through it and follow up with you and see what we can, what's ours and what isn't. But we'll be happy to work with you on that. And then the answer on the street lighting is she's absolutely correct. So the city of Lake Alfred does not have a lighting standard. So all of the lights that are a part of the subdivisions, that's on the responsibility of the HOA. If we ever were to have a lighting standard, that's where, like, other cities that have that, they have, like, a municipal MTSBU, like a municipal benefit taxing unit, and it would be a whole separate layer of taxation that would handle just the lighting standard. But we don't have a lighting standard, nor do we have the tax associated with it. And so those are leased and owned and operated by the subdivision and the HOA as a part of the development process. So.
All right, thank
yep.
you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anybody else? Yes, ma'am.
Good evening. My name is Annie Neely Lewis. I live at 946 Everett Street, Lake Alfred's Experiment Station subdivision. Recently, my family, we had an event at the Alberta's Mosby Community Center. And I told the young lady, I called her Mallory when I turned in the key. Somebody had busted in the door, the outside door where you will put the dumpster is. It was almost off the hinges. The outside was cracked. I took some pictures down at the bottom. The push bar was damaged. It had come loose and several other things on the door. So I don't know if, you know, somebody had tried to break in there or with a crowbar or whatever, but just wanted to bring that to y'all's attention because that happened before we got into the building. And also the podium, we like to have one down there. It was one there, you know, some time ago, but Mallory said that somebody broke the microphone, which it was, and we like to request to have another one there because we do have meetings and events and things down there. We don't want to have to holler across the room so that our people can, you know, hear us talking and whatnot. And an ice maker. Now, I don't know if they run 24/7 or what, or if there's a switch in, like, say, the day before we get to use it or anybody, we can turn it on and then have ice for that day, the next day. So those are just some things at the center. Everything was nice, but except for that door, because I don't know if somebody was fighting in there or what. And there was somebody had a bunch of sticky stuff all over the seats, and we had to clean them. I don't know if there was soda or just what, but they were sticky. And I'm like, well, what's going on? What kind of party did they have here? Well, you know, they didn't invite me, so, you know, I wasn't able to do it. But just things that were, you know, brought to my attention from the family and friends and stuff, and I wanted to bring it to you all so you all can see what's going on down there. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
This was recognized before the event we had there at the Mosby Center, or was this another event that you had?
This one, just past Saturday.
Okay, so it wasn't, because we were there a couple weeks ago. Okay,
so we'll take the list, and I'll work with the parks director, and we should be able to knock out a lot of that stuff.
Thank you for bringing that to our attention. Okay, is there anybody else who would like to come up? Okay, seeing none, we will go ahead and move to consent agenda. We have three items on consent agenda this evening. First is City Commission meeting minutes for February 17, 2026. Number two is City Commission announcements, and three is special event Easter extravaganza application. I want to know what's going on with that. I saw that in the
That's the Baptist Church event. Yeah. They've done it every year, so we've just put it on consent.
No, that sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we'll open this for any comments or questions you may have on either of those three items. If you have any questions or comments, please come forward. Seeing none, I'll open it for City Commission.
Mr. Mayor, I move approval of the consent agenda items 1, 2, and 3.
Second.
Okay, with a motion and a second, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion is carried. All right. Our agenda items tonight, first one is public hearing ordinance 1574-26, Trio Groves annexation. This will be the second reading. And I'd like to ask the city attorney to read the title of the ordinance into the record, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Ordinance number 1574-26, an ordinance of the City Commission of the City of Lake Alfred, Florida, extending the corporate limits of the City of Lake Alfred, Florida, so as to include therein additional territory lying contiguous and adjacent to the present boundaries of the City of Lake Alfred, Florida, describing said additional territory, redefining the boundaries of the City of Lake Alfred to include said property, providing for incorporation of factual recitals, providing for conflicts, providing for severability, providing for the administrative correction of scrivener's errors, providing business impact estimate, and providing for an effective date, general location, an area of approximately 0.036 plus or minus acres, northwest of White Road and southwest of Arbuthnot Lane, further described as a parcel 262-722-000-000-044020 in the Green Swamp area of critical state concern.
Thank you, sir. And now I'll ask City Manager to present his analysis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Pursuant to Florida Statutes, Chapter 171, the city may consider the annexation of unincorporated areas of a county that are contiguous to the municipality, compact in nature, and will not create an enclave. The applicant has submitted a voluntary annexation petition to the city under Florida Statutes to request annexation of one parcel into the City of Lake Alfred. This is a triangular area of approximately 0.036 acres, a very teeny tiny northwest corner of White Road and southwest of Arbuthnot Lane. This parcel was included in a prospective development and is considered a ministerial cleanup. The action currently before the City Commission is only on the annexation of the property into the city. If approved, establishing future land use and zoning designations would be considered in future action items presented to the Planning and Zoning Board and City Commission. Staff recommendation is to approve Ordinance 1574-26 on second and final reading, and staff will be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, sir. Okay, this is an open meeting, and we invite you at this time to come forward with any comments or questions on public hearing Ordinance 1574-26, Trio Groves annexation. Okay, seeing no one, we'll close that opportunity and move on to City Commission comments.
I just had a question about the property value being $21.
Mm-hmm. 0.0036 acres. You might be able to play a four square on it, you know.
Okay.
Maybe a pickleball court.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. And the nuance there as to why they're doing it is because it's actually a part of an approved site plan or part of a development, and so our land use and zoning can't recognize it unless it's a part of the city limits. So you can't have something that's a part of the development but not part of the city. So this really is just a cleanup in nature.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make a motion that we approve Public Hearing Ordinance 1574-26, Trio Groves Annexation.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion is carried. Agenda item number two, public hearing resolution number 03-26, community project funding. I'd like to ask the city attorney to read the title of the resolution into the record, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Resolution number 03-26, a resolution of the City Commission of the City of Lake Alfred, Florida, approving and adopting the fiscal year 2027 community project funding priority list for potential funding applications under the federal community project and or federal appropriation subcommittee programs, providing for the incorporation of factual recitals, providing for authorizations, providing for conflicts, providing for severability, providing for the administrative correction of scrivener's errors, and providing for an effective date.
Thank you, sir. Now I'd like to ask the city manager to present his analysis, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On February 12, 2026, Congressman Scott Franklin announced the opening of the fiscal year 27 community project funding request. Community project funding allows Congress to fund projects directed to specific state or local government or an eligible nonprofit recipient. Every year, each member of Congress is allowed to submit 15 projects for funding consideration. Staff is proposing to submit the following projects to the Office of Congressman Scott Franklin for consideration of appropriations in the 27th cycle. The proposed projects are consistent with the adopted capital improvement project budget, number one being the Lake Alfred Library expansion. The amount requested is $2.5 million, and then the Lake Alfred Evidence Building, which is $750,000. The resolution formally adopts the city's project priority list and provides authorization for the city to submit grant applications for the 27 community project funding cycle. Staff recommendation is to approve Resolution 03-26, and staff will be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, sir.
And I only have a picture of the library. The evidence shed is just a picture of a shed with evidence in it.
Okay. Again, we're in a open meeting to the public, and it's your opportunity to ask any questions or make any comments regarding this particular item. If you'd like to do so, please come forward, state your name and your address. Seeing none, I'll move forward and open it for City Commission comments.
I have just a comment or two. Was there any kind of, or is there a limit on what we can request?
No, I don't.
Because I know we have a lot of other, you know, community projects that need to be funded. I didn't know if there was like a...
Well,
a maximum or minimum, or what, you know, why only target those two if not go after more as well?
The ones that are more shovel ready are the ones that we're going after. So the ones that have designs are already further along. So typically that's the best bet. So like even like with Central Park, I know like we're going to be going into design on the concession, and then once we're into design, it's a much better application if you can show like almost like this, like that's part of the application. Is the rendering, and we also have the civil engineering drawings as well. And then that way they see you've already got skin in the game. You're not just coming up with a prospective list or even a Christmas list. Now, we have gone through the Parks and Rec Master Plan, so we've already kind of done that step. But the next thing that they like to see, whether it's the federal government or the state, they want to see shovel-ready projects to where you can pretty much get them done within a single, you know, year, or at least try to. So that's what we've tried to do. So the goal will be the library was the first one that was shovel ready, in part due to the generous contribution from the Friends of the Library that allowed us to move forward with design. And then I think this year we should be doing the task order for design for the balance of Central Park. And really the design component there is really just the concession stand.
My other question was... If you had a look at your crystal ball, what's the likelihood?
Do we have any insight on that, Aubrey?
Are we competing against everybody else in the state, I would assume, or is it just...
Oh, you're...
Is it limited to, like, certain...
No, we're competing with the nation. So every congressman's allowed to kind of have their top 15. This was similar where we were able to get funding for the fire apparatus. And so these are just ones that are closest to shovel-ready. We also put in for state appropriations on the same projects. The only one that made it to the Senate budget, I believe, was the evidence building, but they put it in at a reduced amount. So we're just shooting darts here.
So it's one of those things you gotta shoot your shot and see.
Yeah. These should be considered Hail Marys, you know, and if we get $2.5 million, you know, even if you, so the way I look at it too though, is if we get a hit on $2.5 million, that frees up $2.5 million to spend elsewhere in parks. So even though we're talking about the library, if we hit pay dirt there, then with the money we would have spent on the library, we just, you know, complete Central Park or a different park phase.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, any other comments? Anybody like to entertain a motion?
I'd like to make a motion to approve Resolution 0326, Community Project Funding.
Second.
Okay, with a motion and a second, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried, and let's go to page 2. Item number 3 is Public Hearing, Developers Agreement, Lowry Hills Utility Extension. I'd like to ask the city manager to present the analysis, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Lower Hills Development is a community development district, or CDD, comprising of approximately 217 acres. The development is generally located north of the railroad tracks and south of Lake Lowry along Old Lake Lowry Road. The development is responsible for providing and extending infrastructure to and within its development, including roads, water, and sewer. As a part of these infrastructure improvements, the city will have a development upsize or extend infrastructure in excess of what is required to serve the development in order to accommodate future development. For example, development may require a 6-inch water line to service its needs, but the city may request a 12-inch water line be installed instead in order to serve future development. In these events, the city is responsible for paying for the difference between the required infrastructure and the additional capacity that is installed, i.e., the cost difference between installing the 12-inch versus a 6-inch line. In this case, the city requested water and sewer line extensions beyond what was required of the development in order to facilitate future connections consistent with our utility master plans. The cost difference between what was required to serve the development and the upgrades requested to provide future capacity is available for reimbursement to the owner in the amount of $118,660 for water main extension and $201,948.80 on the sewer force main extension. If you can see the map, I guess my touch screen doesn't. Oh no, so odd how that does that. Okay, so you can see here, this is kind of like the existing line or the line that was run. So there's development on both sides of the road. They only really need to get the mains in order to the edge of their development, and then they'll have all of their interior lines that might be 4-inch or 6-inch to serve the development itself. But so the city, though, if something develops past this point down the road, you can't tie in the 4-inch line that would be interior in order to service here. So that's what you're seeing. You're seeing the extension. We're basically extending the line in order on the edge of the development in order to service the future. And then we also did it down here to the west. So that basically extends lines to the edge of the current development. And then the next development that comes in, they just pick up from that connection point. So that's effectively what we're paying for, if that makes sense. And so the cost estimate was certified by a professional engineer and was additionally verified by the city's engineer. This is a growth-related expense and will be paid out of water and wastewater connection fees. Staff recommendation is to approve the Lowry Hills Development Agreement, and staff will be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, sir. Okay, we can open up now. Due to the fact we are in an open meeting here and we have opportunities for questions and comments, if there is anybody that has a question or a comment on this item, please feel free to come forward now. Okay, seeing none. We'll move on to City Commission comments.
Mr. Mayor, so City Manager, that means that it saves the city money and it's there ready to go.
What's that?
I'm sorry, I said that saves us money and that gets us ready to go for anything past the future.
It does. They're already out there turning the dirt and installing the pipe, so it's a way for us to leverage economies of scale rather than come and do a separate project later. They have already got everything torn up. You know, you don't want to have to come back in there after. That's just all growth at this point. So now's the time to do it without having to tear up additional things later in order to facilitate future development.
So we're doing it right the first time.
That's it. Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
What is it? Measure twice?
Measure three times.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve the developer's agreement for Lowry Hills Utility Extension.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion is carried. Item number four, bid award, Mackay Dock. And I'd like the city manager to present the analysis on this one, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On February 13, 2026, the City of Lake Alfred posted a solicitation for quotes on DemandStar for the installation of the dock at the Mackay Gardens and Lakeside Preserve. On February 23rd, the following bids were received. One was from John Carver, LLC, in the amount of $110,100, and then Fender Marine Construction in the amount of $122,422. The city originally budgeted $65,000 for this project, and that was based upon a $59,000 dock project that was performed in 2023 by John Carver for the Lions Park dock replacement. Based on feedback from the vendor, they suggested that aluminum dock systems and related hardware has nearly doubled since the Lions Park project. This impacts all major components, including framing, rail systems, and attached hardware. They were still, though, the low bid on the project. John Carver LLC is the low bid and has done prior dock projects for the city. The additional funding required to complete the project will come from general operations and facility maintenance capital project line item. Staff recommendation on this is to approve the bid award to John Carver LLC in the amount of $110,100 to install a new floating dock at Mackay Gardens and Lakeside Preserve. And you can see there on the map, that's kind of the overhead. You can see kind of the open field area and then where the addition or the existing house is. And so the dock in question is actually over here, which is accessible off of a trail there, off of the main entrance. And so similar to what we've done with other docks, it'll just have that composite in the aluminum frame and that'll be consistent with what we've done all over the city. That should last 20 plus years and look good for decades plus. So staff will be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Again, we are open for any questions or comments from the audience this evening on this particular item. Is there anybody that would like to come up and ask a question or make a statement? Great. Seeing none, we will move on to City Commission comments.
I'm happy to see this finally come to bid because I've been kind of pestering about it for a while. The dock we did have was great when it lasted, but it was made of wood and it just kind of fell apart and became unsafe. So glad to see we're going to do it right the first time again. And I'm very happy to see that it's still ADA compliant because that's a really big deal. And it's a way for people who need wheelchair access. There's a sidewalk that runs right down there from where they can park their car and get to it, so they get to see parts of the preserve that, there's places that they can't get to, and this is a good microcosm of the trails at the preserve. And I have to say that from that spot right there, there's beautiful opportunities for sunset pictures. I've taken some there before. If you see a sunset that's starting to be nice, run down there and take a picture from that spot because they're beautiful.
I just had a quick question. Is that pretty much how it's going to look?
Yeah, very similar.
Is the walkway going out, is it all composite on the side and the handrails, or is it actually metal the whole way down?
The handrails will be aluminum, and then just the decking will be the composite material.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Very similar to Lions Park.
Yeah, we kind of rolled out that concept, I think, over 10 years ago, and it's just, lessons learned. We would put the wood ones in.
That's why I was asking.
And they looked like they were.
It wasn't wood.
Yeah. They looked like they were 20 years old after they were in there for like 3 years. And so I think even with the original composites back to when, I can't remember the first one, it might have been Echo. That was one of the early ones that we did with the composite material, and it's holding up.
Yeah.
So the aluminum format with the composites, definitely the way to go to get, you know, not only 20 years of life at it, but a good aesthetic out of it throughout the life of the asset.
And it's safer. It's just, you know, it's not going to rot. It's not going to, you know, the splinters and everything. You don't have to worry about things like that.
The end spot, is this 12 by 12 or is it bigger? I think it's on the invoice. It's 12 by 12.
Mm-hmm.
Is that pretty typical? I guess I would think it'd be a little bit larger.
Yeah, I mean, what were the specs on this one? Or the details.
I'm thinking people are going to like to fish off of it and everything.
There's not going to be a floating part to it anymore, just the deck?
I think it is floating.
It's a 12 by 12 dock. It's going to be 12 by 12, and the perimeter will have the 4 by 22 foot handrails on both sides.
Was it floating, though? Is it a floating dock?
It's floating dock, but they're gonna basically. That's what the rollers are. Did we have those in the pictures too?
No, I just pulled that one.
So, yes, it's gonna be a floating dock, but the way it's going to be stabilized is by a pole basically going on all sides, and it's going to have rollers so it floats up and down around that.
Yeah, like lions.
So it doesn't get destroyed if there was like a hard hit or something like that.
Yeah.
Much more stable than the average, if you will, floating dock.
Okay.
And it will contain a bench, like one of those benches?
Yep, we're going to have a bench or two on there, whatever will fit.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Very nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
Thank you.
Yeah, very similar to the one that we did out at Lyons, and that was lessons learned, too, because we did do a composite, and then the lake level swallowed it again, and then we went with the floating dock.
Mm-hmm.
So
now we got a composite floating dock.
Composite, aluminum, floating dock. We keep building a better mousetrap, or dock in this case.
We should have done it right the first time. Well, I would love to make a motion to bid... To award the bid of the Mackay Dock to John Carver LLC for $110,100.
Second.
Just for clarification for the record, that motion would also include the authorization for the city manager to negotiate and enter into a construction agreement with said contractor.
That would include the provision for the city manager to negotiate a price with the contractor.
We're not expecting any change orders, are we?
No, we do have a standard form construction contract, though, that there's portions of that are still subject to negotiation back and forth, which this commission has previously approved the form, but I always like to make sure we include that within our motion to delegate that authorization to the city manager.
So moved.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Seeing none, motion's carried. All right, now for the fun part. Item number 5, department updates. So,
I'll yield to
City Manager Ryan Levingood to beat the drum and introduce our guest speaker.
I'm going to pass it on to the police chief.
Guest speaker, huh?
Yes, sir.
Harbo Dimer, police chief. I only have one question before I start for the city manager. Am I the only one presenting tonight?
No, I'll present after.
Oh, okay.
On ComDev.
Oh, man, I've got an extra hour to talk to you all today. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'll say it.
I'll be great, Dev, so you can take it up.
Plan. So, all right, so presentation tonight will be on factual information about 2025, goals for 2026, and some things that we've already accomplished in 2026. So hopefully I get this working right. So just for calls for service, to give you an idea of what we did last year, as you can see, with all of our staff, we increased by almost 700 calls for service in 2025 from 2024, with 9,439 calls, which is an average of 25.86 calls a day. Now, when you say that, that's a little over a call every hour, but some calls might take 10 minutes and some calls might take 8 hours. So when you look at that, ladies and gentlemen in our department have really been working hard on getting the job done. We were up a little bit on our crashes, and I believe that's because of our traffic flow increasing up to 253 from 234. Alarms, we went down, which I don't know if that means people have turned them off or have heeded that we do have an alarm ordinance where they could be charged, but that has went down some, so hopefully people are taking care of that. This is a big topic for me every year, the 911 calls. As you can see, we answered 3,257 alarm calls or 911 calls.
Presentation.
Do what? It's still on there.
It's not, the number's not mentioned.
The crashes.
Yeah, no, I see it. And I don't know why that one's, they're not in there. This must be that problem that I had today when we switched that over. All right, well, I'll read what I've got because these should be, actually, I'll read off of the top one. Because it was a second load on this thing. So as you see, we had 3,172 calls last year, which is 264 monthly calls. I would venture to say, and I don't know how we would keep track of this, I would say over 95% of those calls are not accurate calls, or they're false pocket calls, or whatever happens. So it's just a thing I try to push out that, please check your phones. Please keep kids away from a phone. And every phone, regardless of whether it has service or not, has the ability to call 911. So I know a lot of people, they let their children have the phone when they're done with it, and they think it has no service. As long as it can turn on, it can call 911. So to prevent us to answer this many calls, and we go to every one of them that we get, This is a lot of time off of what we could be serving our public, doing better things, and watching over our public more other than running these calls. The other thing on these calls, if we don't know what the situation is, a lot of times we're running lights and siren. It puts us at jeopardy that much more, and it also puts our traveling public at jeopardy for trying to travel with these calls. All right, so going into, and I'm not going to go by the screen because apparently they loaded the back stats when I reloaded a case on it today. So these are leading traffic stats out of those calls I gave you. In 25, we had 1,980 traffic stops. In 2025, we had 3,214. 1,157 of those stops resulted in a moving traffic infraction where people received citations which result in points on their driver's license or other fines and functions. 317 of them were for non-moving infractions where there's just a fine attached, and 308 of them were criminal. So when you look at the statistics, typically what's been happening over the last 6 months, approximately a quarter of all the citations we write, a quarter of those happen to turn out to be criminal citations. That might be no driver's license, no insurance, suspended driver's license. So we have a lot of people on our roadways committing criminal acts while they drive cars. Information calls, which can be a variety of things, 856 versus 699. The suspicious persons, vehicles, and incident calls actually went down by 200. We only had 545 versus 768 previously. 911 calls, of course, we went over that already. And then the assist to other agencies, which could have been a variety of things from Polk County Sheriff's Office, Winter Haven, Haines City, Auburndale to EMS, or other agencies within the city in those things. So 345 of those. We had 361 disturbances, which were down by quite a bit, which I'm proud of. I don't know if that's because of the weather, the stars aligning or whatever that's supposed to be. That's a good thing to have. Perimeter checks we went down on, not by much. But I do, just to pass the message along, when people go on vacation, you have the ability to call the police department, let us know you'll be on vacation, what lights, what cars, what people may be there, and let us know when you'll be leaving and when you'll be back. That way we can do special patrols on a regular basis on every shift. Disabled vehicles has went down by 60. And there again, I don't know if it's because we're buying new cars or people are just taking better shape of their cars or getting them off the road. Other duties, we did about 898 calls, which is down by about 100. Now let's see if this one popped in right. It did not. So you just have to hear me tonight. I don't know why, because we redid this today, and these things were in the original one. So as you know, every year I give a five-year report on grants and what we have on grants. As you see, last year we had 159, 415 for the five-year. This year for the five-year we went down to 139, 655. Part of that reason is in 2025, instead of using our ability to get the Burns grant, because we started the speed zone camera money, there were some other departments within this county that needed a little bit more money to finish some of the grant needs they needed to get them 100%. And so we agreed, and I talked with the city manager about that because of that. I warned all of them coming back for 2026, we will be back on the charts to get our grant money again, and they may be the ones giving back. So we did have a drop in that, but that's why. All right, so for 2025, we continued the daily policy training. And what that is, in our Lexapol process we have for policies that help us out, that change yearly depending on whether local, state, or federal laws change. Lexapol helps us change that with backup. The other part of that for our officers, every day of the month, each month, they have a daily training policy that they go over. It's a short scenario based on all kinds of policies that we have. It teaches the officers to know our policies better, and it also helps them to find where we need to go for policies when we're implementing our police work. Of course, we assist in multiple community events. We purchased more flock cameras, which came from the speed money, because if you remember right, each camera that we used in speed money, we also received a flock camera to go with it, which has been instrumental in solving more criminal cases. And as you know, we implemented the live citation school zone speed cameras this year. The other big thing that we did in 2025, if you remember right, in 2024, we spent about $117,000 on our radio console. That was the bid. It took us almost a year to the date to get that radio in and get that stuff installed. So we are up and running on that, and use of walkie-talkies is only for school radios or a county-wide radio that we have to use. Everything else is back on our console. So this is not going to be, it's on the old plan. Some of it's still the same. All right, so in 2026, we have purchased four new vehicles, three SUVs and one pickup. Two of those will replace existing vehicles. Two of them will be for the new officers that come in with speed money. We're still waiting on, and I've been saying this for about 3 years now, the implementation of the new computer program for our reports, records, and communications. Our hands are kind of tied to that. We have a countywide system that is implemented through the sheriff's office, and they are still working this time for a program that we were told would go online 2 to 3 years ago, and that's still in progress. But we can't do anything. Of course, new evidence and storage building that we talked about, the hiring of additional officers, and just to let you know what we're doing, because we are short once again with an officer leaving a couple weeks ago. So currently right now we have, we're waiting on 5 long apps to come in for police officers and waiting on 2 short applications where people just turn in a one of their personal built representatives of it that we still make them fill out the application because there's so much more other than their resume that we have them do. So we're looking at those. Hopefully those candidates through the background will be strong, and we can fill some of these positions. We're also looking to hire 2 communications operators. We actually have interviews tomorrow with some pretty good candidates for those positions. At least one, if not 2 of them, have previous experience, and we've had pretty good background so far on those. All right, so just our law enforcement staff, of course, Lieutenant Jennifer Gillette, who's over investigations and records management, Lieutenant Larry Holden over patrol and asset management, Sergeant Leatherberry is part-time and helps with evidence management, Officer Ghetto is one of our nighttime patrol, Officer Lopez is one of our nighttime patrol officers, Officer Carlos Diaz is one of our SROs at Hartridge Academy, Officer Clyde Harris is a SRO at Discovery Academy, Officer Jen O'Neill is a part-time patrol officer, and Officer Watson Edion is an SRO at Discovery High School. Officer Patrick King, of course, you know, left and went over to Auburndale. I really hate he went to Auburndale, but I can tell you Officer King, who is now a corporal already and hasn't been gone a year, actually received the Officer of the Year Award for Auburndale Police Department. And as much as I'm proud to say he got that, I'm also proud to say that that young man started from high school training with us for almost 3 years to get a really good background in what he was doing. He took it a step further and went to another agency and is doing very well. Officer Manisha Robinson is a day shift patrol officer. Officer Hernandez is one of our day shift and nighttime swing officers. And then we have a new officer that started in January, if you have not met him, Officer Jeremy Ledbetter, which we will be doing a ceremony as soon as we get proper uniforms in here. So we are increasing. And then, of course, our communication staff, which all of you know, that's our first contact for the city during hours and especially after hours. Celeste Stillen is our communications coordinator. Rayanne Rocky is one of our communications operators. Ed Palmer, Joette Ramirez is one of our full-time. Jennifer McDermott Smith, and I'm going to call her Smith because she got married here a few months ago and changed her name on me, is a part-time communication operator and trainer. And like I said, we're hiring two new operators quickly.
How many vacancies do we have currently on the sworn positions, Chief? Three?
Four, counting the school money officers that will be specific. And if I can talk just a little bit on that.
Yeah.
So the two officers that will be hired underneath the school or the speed money that we're getting will have very specialized assignments, and part of that will be at the school in mornings and afternoons. Part of it will be looking at cameras, which, you know, currently since we started Inception last year, that's been my two lieutenants and myself. I'm more of my lieutenants that have held that. Recently, our part-time officer, Trent O'Neill, has jumped in on that and really been an integral part. And so it's that's what those officers will be. And then when we have speed problems in certain areas of the city, that will be part of their assignment. And then crash work enforcement on there. So right now, as far as we were back to full staff is what we were last year, until we lost this officer a couple of weeks ago. So we certainly want to get back up to that so that we will have two people per shift on every shift, and get us back square, and then hire an additional one on top of that for regular patrol. So if we switch over to speed cameras, as you know, the warning period in social media began in November of 2024. We went live on January 13th of 2025. From January 13th to December 31st, 64,286 citations were approved. That doesn't count the ones we rejected. During the same time period, 44,202 citations were paid, which is approximately a 69% pay rate. Now, that, if you do your math real quick, that leaves us about 20,000 citations that were unpaid on the initial civil citations without any points or anything against your license, insurance, or other means. So those additional 20,084 tickets, the majority of them will receive a UTC citation, which means it goes against their driving record. And other things, even though points aren't attached to that, the fine, instead of being a $100 civil fine, will increase to $209 because of the court fees and the other fees we get. The other part of that that's a little more beneficial to the city, any of those people that pay that fee, and since we didn't do cost share with Ultimate on those tickets, instead of getting a percentage of the $60, where some of that goes to them, we will get the full $60 to implement that. Plus, we will also get a little bit of the court cost, which we have to work out with the clerk's office on exactly how we're going to document that for finance and keep up with that in its own little department. So the one thing, if you do a quick study, if only half those people that get UTCs pay their UTCs at that rate, it puts your amount up to over 80%, which is what is the general for a paying on that. If I think 15% will be up near the 90 percentile pay rate for all citations that were received during that time. And people are starting to learn, and we're getting a lot of phone calls that now they've got the UTC. They thought the other things were a joke, and now they know it's not a joke anymore. And since they started actually loading to the clerk's office last week, we're receiving quite a few calls on what they could have done or should have done. But it's too late once those UTCs go out, because that's put into our state system. From inception, and it's one of the things I'm certainly not proud that we had in the first place, but proud that it's doing what the company has certainly documented on many of their state platforms and in our committees and in our conferences. We've had an 86% reduction in speed since the inception of doing the traffic study. So that's pretty impressive. Now, and this is really the page that I hate that's not up on my screen. So I'm just going to break down the funding allocations for what the speed cameras have brought to not only Lake Alfred, but to many people that the state law says they have to bring. So the total collected funds for that time period was $71,153. Of that money, the state of Florida received $936,545. the Polk County School Board received $488,538. The Polk County School Board's Crossing Guard program received $202,557. And Altamont, our company that hosts our cameras and are responsible for that, received $566,215. The city's part of that gross was $2,442.69. Out of that, we have to pay for the program, and our cost that we have received in the net is $1,907.74. So as you see, a lot of people, I know you've seen it on Facebook and stuff, how this is all about Lake Alfred, but when you look at the other people that have received these funds, there's a lot of people around us locally that have received a lot of things to do better things in their department. I've asked some questions of some of the agencies that have got it, as of yet, receive any information on exactly what they're doing with those monies, but I'm going to continue to ask. One of the things I'm really is near and dear to me is through the state of Florida, because part of that money goes to the Law Enforcement Training Fund. And many years ago, when things got tough, they had to drop that training fund from $120 per officer in the state down to like 80-something, I believe it's went down to. So that's free training that our local schools like Polk State actually get, and our officers are allowed to go train specialty classes without any cost to the agency. So those funds are very important. I certainly hope, and I'm going to keep asking at our Chiefs Conference to the FDLE director, what are we doing with those funds, and are we fighting to get because it's specific to the Law Enforcement Training Fund. So hopefully that's where that stuff's going, and I hope locally the school board and our PCSO guard program is doing some kind of beneficial things. It has to go for retention and upgrades to their system or to their people, so hopefully they're looking at what they can do with that because they received over $200,000. So that pretty much completes my presentation. I have to apologize for my screen not going with it. Me and Linda looked over the first one, and I had like two things I wanted to change, but apparently I didn't change the right one. So I would ask if there's any questions from the audience or the commission. I'll be glad to answer those.
Who's going first? The audience first?
Is there anybody in the audience who would like to come forward? Please.
Yes, sir.
Get your name and your address, please.
John Donovan at the Masonic Lodge down there at 260 East Palmelo Street. First of all, Chief, I want to tell you that you guys are doing an outstanding job, as everybody knows, but I have to say it myself as well. Auburndale Police getting that young man is a true tribute to you as well, to you and your staff, because he's learned all this stuff and he's gone on to improve himself in other areas and help other communities as well. And as a resident of Auburndale, I have to say thank you. I've encountered a couple of people that have gotten speeding tickets in Lake Alfred. I said, well, I go to Lake Alfred City Commission meetings, and I know that Chief of Police, he explained that to us. And if you were speeding, then sorry about your luck. You know, you shouldn't do that. Oh, no, no, no. That's only during school hours. I said, well, I don't know, but next chance I get to ask the Chief of Police, I'll ask him. And that's my question to you, sir.
Okay. All right, so we've reiterated this, I don't know how many times, and we still have that question today. Most of the time, not from local people, because I think we've explained that enough in Lake Alfred censored Lake Alfred of that. So the school zone cameras run from 6:40 in the morning to 3:54 in the afternoon. 30 minutes before school, the flashing lights come on, to 30 minutes after those flashing lights go off. As you well know, currently in the legislation, and I haven't seen where that went last week, they were looking at trying to change that law so that they only were able to be on during the flashing hours. But I can tell you, once again, with other things that y'all well know that our legislators are coming up with, one thing does not fit everybody. One scale doesn't. A lot of schools, when they get their schools in session, they're done until they let people or the students back out. Our situation being on 1792 on both sides, where we have constant walking to and from our stores and stuff in between Shin and Lakeshore Way all day long, most people don't realize what that volume is. Or our traffic trying to get out on both sides of the road with three lanes going all kinds of speed. So, like I say again, I'm hoping that that does not pass. The Chief Association is certainly fighting that to keep that up and let the different jurisdictions that have their own questions apply what they need to happen in their schools. So, any other questions from citizens?
Okay, seeing none, we'll go to commission comments.
From what you just said, if we had traffic lights, we wouldn't have so much of a problem getting across the street or for the cars to get out with people speeding. But my question was, we know that it's false that we put that there to make money. We put that there to slow people down. In what is your sense of, from the beginning, how many speeding people there were compared to now? Has it helped dwindle down the amount of speeding?
Well, if you remember, in the first 3 months, we went 15,000, 10,000, 5,000. That's even decreased more, even though we still have some that are up, you know, near 4,000 a month. So I think that we'll see in next year's report, you won't see anywhere near it. I can tell you, when we started this program, in my mind, we weren't going to do a quarter of what we have done this year because I wanted to make sure that I was really worried in the first place, you know, because we have to pay for both these cameras monthly. I was worried in the first place, would we have enough to pay for the cameras based on the price of them? Well, I think that's been answered very easily of what we have that we've paid. We've paid for the other part that we have, because after so many citations, we also pay an additional fee for each citation just for mailing. So that's taken out of our funding, too, for that process. So once we reach that, you know, that threshold, we pay for that, too, which is pretty expensive mailing. But they do have to do personnel to do it and make sure they line up with all the right information in that mailing out of the citations.
From what I've seen lately, the traffic is so bad you can't speed anymore. It's people are back-to-back going all the way up to 557 that way. But you guys are doing a great job, and remember, there's no retiring here in Lake Alfred.
Did y'all hear that? That's for you younger people.
Mm-hmm.
No, but I can tell you the last few days, and just talk about our traffic flow, because we had a citizen complaint today about traffic flow on Rochelle, right over here in the North Rochelle area. It's not just because people all of a sudden decided to start flying down North Rochelle. It's because they replaced both traffic boxes at this intersection and the Shin intersection last Tuesday and Thursday. The one on this side works good for a little while, and then all of a sudden every 15 seconds when the light's on, the turn light goes to red. Then it goes back to green for 15 seconds. I've called them about three times now since Thursday to try to correct that. Today we were backed up all the way to Echo Street because of that. When you have that, people are going to start trying to cut through neighborhoods to figure out what they can do to beat the traffic. And people in the middle lane trying to get in the left lane causes another lane to be blocked, so we end up with one lane of through traffic. And tell you the truth, it gets pretty dangerous if you get down there and start looking at people cutting in and out of each line to try to get ahead. So that's part of our traffic problem right now, is signalization and getting it back up with these new boxes.
Chief, I'll ask a question. It comes up every now and then. I know we've talked about it in the past, and it gets kicked around. Sometimes it makes its way to me or the like. But, you know, the whole concept of we're a smaller agency, but we've got a ton of, and yes, we're growing. We've got open positions, a ton of calls for service, traffic coming through. You know, but when you compare to like an Auburndale or maybe even a Winter Haven, you know, and that call comes in and you've got the officer out on the road, you know, how do they, if they need assistance, you know, not, it's not always going to come directly from your own agency. But if you could just speak to, like, how we handle that and just a collaborative approach that we take, you know, not only with our own agency, but just the ones that are around us.
So certainly, and this is working mainly with the Sheriff's Office, who, as you know, has county radio, and they handle the majority of, well, all the cities around us as far as radio communication. So basically, with our walkie-talkies, when officers are out on the road, even if they're alone, state law says you're not allowed to work one police officer unless you have interoperable communication. So literally, if one of our officers out on the road and something happens and they're by themselves, they do a one-button flick, and they're talking to our whole part of the county, and talking to dispatch. They're talking to Auburndale. They're talking to Winter Haven. They're talking to Haines City and all our parts of the district. And the same with us. As they monitor those stations, and they need help in emergency situations, we all jump in, and people are coming quickly because they know you wouldn't be on another channel trying to get help if you didn't need help. So working collaboratively, our radio system has definitely improved over the years. Mm-hmm. We have officers that on many occasions, while I monitor the radio, they've taken the right step. They haven't taken the time to actually call Lake Alfred Police Department, please call Auburndale Police Department. That goes through a transition and we lose time. They simply switch that one switch over to that channel and they're on our region and they're able to talk directly with the dispatcher from the Sheriff's Office, which alleviates a lot of times when we have those lower manpowers. And I can tell you sometimes some of our bigger cities around here, you would be absolutely astounded of what they have for patrol officers versus the per capita to get things done and accomplished. And they fall underneath the same situation where they call us. And I may have said this before, but I actually had a captain that's now promoted to a major with the Sheriff's Office that did a study year before last because he really wanted to know. A lot of times agencies, especially the bigger agencies, want to know how many times did they help Lake Alfred. In his study, and he relayed this back to me, Lake Alfred actually helped them more than they helped us in that particular year, which is impressive that we still get the job done when we get done and we're still able to help other people. I think the other thing that we've helped throughout this county this year, and I think our city manager and some other staff knows, that the implementation of the speed cameras, we've kind of been the grandfather in this county. I have at least four other agencies that have come to us. They've come to our hearings that we've had to try to learn how we do it in a professional and successful manner. I think the training that we did on the front end of it, and also Seth helping us on the law, or you know, our laws part of it, and what we needed to do to implement hearings, we certainly, I think, stand out. And we have meetings once a month with a traffic safety team, and at the end of it, everybody who has red light cameras and speed cameras, we stop and meet just so we can talk about any errors that some of the courts are letting through. And I know one agency not in our county, I think that they rejected 2,000 citations for a simple step that wasn't followed in that. But through that, we all learned. So our department's really been good. We've really been progressive at helping other departments, regardless of whoever their company was, get integrated into this and tell them what our best practices were with our hearing officer. And we've still got more to learn now that we're going to do all the UTCs and we're going to have to go do testifying out with those and see how our hearing officer wants to do that and what they actually want presented. But again, we're going to do pre-hearings with them if they'll allow us. Find out what they want, teach us what they want, and show them what we have to offer. Which may be over the top for what they have, but that's part of what we're doing in the big collaboration with ourselves and other agencies for safety of our officers.
Thank you, Chief.
Chief, I just want to let you know how much I appreciate what y'all do, but it's even more important as I get around town, and whether it's at church or I was in the sheriff's office today picking up some stuff. And Grady had signed some stuff for a church raffle, but anyway, I had to go pick it up. And as I went through their security, he's, where are you from? Lake Alfred. He goes,
says, yeah, I know your chief over there. He's a good man. He says, you guys got a good program going on over there. And I just, you know, I hear that often enough that it just really, I know you hear it, but it is not just somebody trying to blow smoke with you. I think they're just trying to tell me that, you know, you got a good operation going over there, and I appreciate that. So,
yeah, well, I think one of the things that we're trying to improve on is the time it takes to hire new officers. But a lot of people think in a small agency, you just don't need high caliber officers, and that I lead that back to you're just a training agency, and that's not what we want to be in the city. But the other thing that I see is that we turn down many applicants at some other agencies. I talked to a chief actually in this last week, and I asked him, I said, you know, what do you do to try to increase your number of applicants and the people you actually hire? And he said, well, I really believe in second chances, which I do too. You know what I mean? Because there's sometimes, you know, there are political issues at places and people get caught up in them. But he said, tell you the truth, it wasn't a very solid program. About 2 in every 10 people I hired didn't last, you know, not even 2 years. And when I think about those stats and what it cost, it cost somewhere between $5,000 to $10,000 to hire a police officer by the time you do all the background, you do all the testing we have to do, and then get through that 14-week training program. I'm thinking that I'd rather go out there and do the job myself than be 2 of 10 hiring people and have those headaches. The other thing that I think we have to do is our officers have to think more independently, because we don't have a sergeant on every shift to get a phone call for every call that you go on to find out what should I do, what you shouldn't do. So I give credit to all my personnel in dispatch and in the field, because they really think independently. It's about an us and a we. And over the years, the ones that weren't the us and the we have moved on. And hopefully when that happens, we become a better, stronger organization to serve people. That's what we're paid to do.
Well, we appreciate what you do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
Okay. All right. Now I'll defer to city manager.
All right. You mean interim community development director?
Well, I switched.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I switched that.
You didn't catch it.
Again, this is the opportunity to hear from all the department heads. Again, I try to take a back seat to this. This is that opportunity. But I am in the capacity of the community development director, so I'm going to put that lens on. You know, sometimes the question comes up, oh, I forgot you were doing both. And just what I've ran into, I've tried to fill the position a couple of times, and just where we're at is it's such a nuanced skill set between technical and management is that, and I've just had the experience over the last however many years to where, and with all the growth and development that we have in Lake Alfred, management tends to kind of orient itself around what the priorities are. So if a city has a lot of financial issues, they may lean to someone that has more of a financial background as their manager. If you look at the history of city management in the early days, 100 years ago, most city managers were actually engineers, because that's when everything was being built, all the infrastructure was going in, and so many cities couldn't afford their own separate engineers, and so the city manager was the engineer. Now we're much more typical generalists with, you know, expertise in HR and budgeting and other things, but in Florida and in central Florida and in Lake Alfred, Tom Dev is front and center in almost everything that we do. So, and my joking way of saying that is 90% of the problems were coming out of Tom Dev anyways, so I might as well just head it off at the pass and deal with it directly, because it was going to land on my desk anyways. So this kind of shows you the history, so annexations as well as future land use and zoning actions. You can see acreage, let's see, yeah, acreage, and then you go, oh my goodness, what happened back in 2023? You know, we annexed 4 parcels, and it was 7,000 acres. And of course, that was when we took in Holochi, you know, the state. That's actually what put us north of I-4 when we took in those state lands. You know, I think somewhere along the line, someone panicked and thought, oh my goodness, the city's going to develop, you know, the Holochi Preserve. And we're like, no, 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 we're just
We're annexing it. We're bringing it into the city limits. It'll be that way, you know, in perpetuity. You can see then it's kind of scaled back down. We haven't had too much annexation activity. The action item that you did put tonight will make sure that .0036, you know, gets calculated into next year's calculation. Comp plan text amendments, we've had a couple of those. Those are a bit deceiving because there may only be one transmittal or one ordinance, but that ordinance could be, you know, the entire master plan community section or a major amendment with the text side. We were pretty busy in 2025. You can see the two text amendments that went through. A lot of those were related to the 180 issue where we had to go back in. And then we've had, you can see over the years, the CDDs, which would be the community development districts that have come through since 2019, and each one of those represents a different subdivision or development, whether it's like the Springs or Silver Lake or Lowry Hills, Eden Hills also was one. So that kind of covers it on the action items, but on the commercial side, and this year we had AutoZone come in, we had IAA, your international auto, that's the big auto auction site that kind of was on the east side of town over there by Growers, behind the government center, where the county, where you get your driver's license, that one was there. I think now it's actually going to be Ritchie Brothers coming soon. We've got Publix that's in the works. And we've got McDonald's that's coming through the process, and also the pharmacy that everyone keeps asking me about. They just went through their pre-construction on that, so we should see a demolition of the old building there pretty soon, and that will be a pharmacy right across the street from us. Of course, Publix will have its own pharmacy. I keep getting asked details about, do I know what's going there? I don't. I've got some mostly close to the vest. The only concept plan I've seen, I think there's like five out parcels, which are towards the road. I've seen a concept on a Circle K. I've heard a bank. I've heard of a sit-down restaurant, but I haven't received any formal submittals, and they don't like to name names. So I won't know that until they come in. McDonald's is working its way through the site plan process where the old crane company is. So right there on the other side of where Hardee's is, you know, where you see that big fence where the cranes are kind of stored behind it. So they're going through site plan. But again, no guarantee. Site plan, you know, there's stuff that went through site plan and it took them 20 years to build. Track 6 of the lakes being one of them. So we don't know for sure, but they are working their way through the process. Development Review Committee. So this is kind of like where we pulled the team together. And review everything. That's going to be your engineers, your attorneys, your planners, your surveyors. That's on the city side, as well as the development applicant or the owner going with their team. And so it's this big collaboration. I call it this extended game of tennis. You hit the ball. They'll hit the ball to you. You take a month to review everything. You hit the ball back. And then, you know, it whittles its way down until it works its way to an approval. You can see their pre-apps. We've had 23 last year. We really try to leverage the pre-application process because that allows folks to come in and with their concept, with their idea, and kind of get that initial round of feedback and comments before they formally start the process. I encourage that. We actually lose money on it. I think we might charge like $200 for someone to come in, but that is money well spent. It's an investment, and that way prospective, you know, applicants, owners, they kind of really know what they're looking into, and it just helps to set them up for success. Site plan, five. Site plan is typically like the horizontal, you know, infrastructure, roads, those types of components. Construction plans, typically what we would call the vertical. That's where you get, you know, houses or buildings or the like. So your site plan then conforms to the code, and then the construction plan really conforms to the code and the building code. Site plan is usually the more rigorous of the two, and just in the sense of getting through the process, construction plans tend to come in, come in quicker and easier than the site plans. Platting, that's where we're kind of we show you take that raw piece of land and you carve out where the lots go, where the roads go, where the right-of-way goes. It's really kind of carving that sculpture into the land, and that's what gives you your lots and your subdivisions and things along those lines. Seth spends a lot of time on the plats as well as the surveyors. You don't want to get a mistake on the plat because these things are absolutely referenced 100 years later. We're looking at things today that were done 100 years ago, and whether they were done correctly or incorrectly creates very much headaches and complications and problems today. So that's one of those things where the plats will outlast us all. And you'll see names from 100 years ago, and they signed off on it. So pretty neat side of it, but very complex. If you ever have trouble sleeping, I can probably give you a recording of the DRC on plat review, and either you'll go to sleep or your blood pressure will increase. It'll be one or the other. And then special events, even like the Easter extravaganza and things like that, we typically will use the DRC committee review, and then that way everyone can review it and make sure, you know, that everything's covered.
Can I ask on this slide, are some of those like doubled up? For example, one of those pre-apps could also be in the construction plan, so they would be doubled up for those numbers?
Pre-app would be independent. Site plan, construction plans, and plats would all kind of run hand in hand. You know, again, the site, you start with the site plan process. You don't have to do a pre-app. We encourage it. But they very much can overlap. So you could come in for a pre-app. You would have to do a site plan. You would have to do construction plans, and then depending if you're dealing with a large amount of raw land that hasn't been platted yet, you'll have to go through a plat.
So those numbers aren't like, you wouldn't add all of those together,
no.
And they're all separate projects. Some of them are in both stages in that year.
Yep, some of them just kind of roll through. But again, it can be deceiving because one site plan and one construction plan might be the Springs at Lake Alfred, and you're talking about a 1,000-unit subdivision, you know, where Publix might be one site plan, you know, one construction plan, and then one plat. So they're the same process, but and I guess part of it too is that it's not twice the amount of work to do a 1,000-unit subdivision as it is to do a 500-unit subdivision. I'm not going to say it's the same amount of work, but typically, you know, there are economies of scale. You know, the larger the project is. Building activity, this is probably the more useful stat in some ways. So permits issued, you can see 2023 was in 2024. We were kind of burning it from both ends, over 1,000 permits issued in both years. We tapered down a little bit in 25, 755. Year to date, we're only, again, 2 months in, but we're at 65 new homes. You can see 479, 663, only 220 in 25. And then year to date, we're at 8. So we're seeing a tapering effect. It kind of ebbs and flows, but 23 and 24 were absolutely gangbusters for us. And the reason there being, the post-COVID boom, we did the land development code update at the end of 2020, which allowed development to proceed. And then when you had the post-COVID boom that fed into that, again, it probably takes a year or two to go through site plan and initial infrastructure, so there's always a lag effect, and then it hit, you know, 2-3 years later, and that's why we saw the spike in 23-24. Building inspections, you can see, again, running very hot over those last couple years. It has tapered off, though, recently. I've gotten feedback from the inspectors that, you know, much more manageable than it was in the past. And some of the buildings now, or some of the developments, are using private providers to where they actually do their own inspections with a third party. And so that kind of takes some of the workload off of us, although, you know, we still have to audit them a little bit and we're still ultimately responsible, or we end up with whatever they inspect. But that is something that we're seeing an increased prevalence of as well. Lien searches is usually just an indicator of overall interest. So if you get a lot of lien searches, it means people are interested in acquiring property.
So this is kind of like a litmus test or a gauge of just how hot kind of the market is. You can see where we've kind of averaged around, you know, right around the 200 range. So that's continued up. I think in years past it was, you know, half that, if not less. Code enforcement hearings and cases, you can see there, you know, 137 and 23, 69 and 24, and then 106 and 25. And so that's, we kind of average, that stayed pretty consistent. And Carl and the department have done a good job of kind of clearing out the most egregious cases. We've actually gotten compliance on quite a few of the bigger ones that have been out there for years. And again, code enforcement, the goal is compliance. We're really not. You can see stark stories from coastal communities or other areas where, you know, code enforcement is super aggressive. It's a fine-producing machine, you know, almost like a revenue source. We do not treat it that way. All we're looking for is compliance on the critical issues. We're predominantly complaint-driven. So just so you know, if you get a code enforcement complaint, it's not that we were driving around. It's probably that your neighbor probably turned you in. So, you know, make sure you bake some bread or, you know, make good with your neighbors. And, you know, that's probably 90-95% of it. But again, all we're shooting for is compliance, and we work with our, you know, with the cases and try to work with people. And then even after the fines are assessed, after they gain compliance, you know, staff has no problem with 90-95% reductions or more in the fines. And the that all is determined by the magistrate. That's not up to city staff. But we don't object or stand in the way of that. Again, we're just happy to gain compliance on whatever the particular issue was. Department accomplishments. So, Sean, the superintendent for the department, he's obtained his floodplain manager certification. So that's a big add for him. And for us, added code enforcement and planning modules to the Excella system. So Excella is like the permitting software that Polk County uses, and so we actually recreated that there. That saved us some money, but more importantly, it's a familiar process. So all the contractors, everyone does work in Polk County. So if you pull permits in Polk County, you're already familiar with their system. So rather than reinvent the wheel and force them to learn yet again another system, we just kind of went hand in glove with the county, and our contractors and applicants have done very well with that because there's no learning curve. They've already known how to do it from years of working with the county. There's a good interface with it too. So there's an online portal and interface. So a lot of things are digital and electronic based. We're really trying to get away from the hard copy element, although that's still a component. You can see there too, digitize old paper files and maps for storage and retrieval. So really just modernizing the department, especially as the workload has increased. You know, necessity is the mother of invention. So going to that Excella system has helped us with the processing the workload. Additionally, we've added, the code enforcement module, and then the planning module is we're still working on implementation, but that will assist with the DRC process. So that very extended game of tennis that I've talked about, my goal is to get that closer and closer to ping pong and get it rapidly back and forth and, you know, cut down the review time and the frustration that the applicant sometimes experiences with that. And my joke is I'm just going to lock the engineers in a room, take the surveyors and lock them in a room, and we'll give them bread and water until they come back out, you know, with whatever the solution is. And so we're going to use that to kind of create the digital equivalent of that, you know, without violating any labor laws and just hopefully get a better end product and get through the process faster for our applicants. And that is kind of the round robin of the community development department. So, yeah, I will stand for any questions that anyone may have.
Anybody in the audience have questions or comments?
Sure.
Okay,
seeing
none.
Michael.
Hello.
Anybody have any comments or questions? Okay, anybody on the commission?
Job well done and very clear, concise, and I think you even went into the time limit. I don't know if I've ever seen that before.
Yeah, really? Hey, every now and then, you know.
Well, It is. I mean, that some of those slides are, I think, indicative of the market. You know, it was a little bit down, but we're still such on a hot area that I think one of those previous slides said there's still several there in process right now. So in your crystal ball, do you think we'll be a little bit higher than we were last year in some of the
A lot of it's going to depend on the overall trend in the economy, but I think we have like built up momentum that'll carry us through because we saw the spike of all the work that happened in 2021. So that spring compressed and then it launched, but now those phases are finishing out those later phases of those projects. So you're starting to see it kind of like taper and downtrend. But we're working now on other projects that are coming through. So like Lowry, the one that we just approved, the one that the commission just approved the utility extension on, they haven't even really started building houses yet. So you got like 600 plus homes there. Springs has several phases left. We've got another one, Trio Groves, that's coming in the mix. You know, Florida Club is starting to come back and have conversations. So even if we hit a short-term lull, I think the next phases and the next cycles are just right around the corner. So in some ways, I'll say we'll take the reprieve, you know, we'll hopefully buy some time for the county to complete the County Road 557, you know, and then hopefully alleviate some of the traffic concerns before these future phases, you know, kick into high gear.
And Florida Club, they've been on the horizon for, like, what, 7 years? Seven-plus years? Because they were before I even got on. I've been on here for,
was it 2019?
Yeah, that's when I started.
The Florida Club has been around for a while. I can at least back to 2020. But, you know, as the market changes, so do their ideas for how they want to move forward with that project. So, you know, that also triggers different things within ComDev. And just to give you an idea, like the Lowry Hills project, about how intricate some of those, you know, tennis matches can actually be when the ball's getting volleyed back and forth, is that project probably had about 30 different types of recorded easements that that covered the entire developable area of the property that's going to be the Lowry Hills development. And so you have to go back and remember, you saw that little corner of that, the annexation piece that we had tonight, right? But imagine you have 30 different recorded instruments that create some property right or interest in the property, and now the municipality can't really issue permits to build over somebody else's property right. So, I mean, we have to resolve all of those issues, and some projects are easier than others, but Ryan's done a great job of, you know, keeping everybody at bay, and no boxing gloves or anything have come out, you know, and we've been able to move the projects forward quite efficiently, in my opinion. So, hats off.
Thank you.
But the Florida Club seem like it might be more workforce housing.
They had more of the mobile home, or not mobile home, but modular. You know, I think that the conversations we're having, there's probably going to be a pivot there. I don't think they're going to stick with that concept. Something may work its way back through, you know, the process. As
I thought in the beginning, that's kind of what it looked like as a whole, that it was going to be more of a...
No, the original was almost like a Shalimar, like over in Auburndale, like 55-plus, you know, golf community with the modular homes. And then it pivoted from there to more of like just like open space. They got away from the professional golf course component. And then and then it's just kind of gone dormant. You can see the old sign out there that's kind of sun-bleached. And it's gone away, and then they've just recently come back, you know, with a different concept. But again, that stuff would work its way probably through the land development process at some point. But it's just, they're at the table.
And they're the ones that were going to realign Lynchburg Road?
Yeah, so that one, that was tied back to that concept, because if you've got a golf cart community, you don't want to have golf carts going across Lynchburg Road. If they pivot, though, and they go more with a traditional development like single-family residential, they may not do that. But all of that would work its way, again, going through the DRC process and the tennis match of back and forth. You know, we would have all those conversations with them on necessary road improvements, you know, related back to the development that they were actually looking to do. But that's a big opportunity. That's our last largest piece of undeveloped land on the west of side of the city that's not in the green swamp. So that will be it for us. That'll be, once that develops, that's pretty much it, because then we border with Winter Haven and Auburndale. You might see some redevelopment in the Mariana Acres, but that might take 20, 30 years, you know, to work its way through that process. So that'll be the last big one that we have.
Okay, my other question was related to a gas station in the Green Swamp. I thought originally that was not supposed to happen.
I'll go back and check the code. I think it's allowed, and I'll go back and check it. It depends on the overlay. I think it's allowed because there is that gas station all the way up to the north.
Well, that was grandfathered in at the time. When we did the Green Swamp overlay, and plus it wasn't in there originally, then our boundaries moved up that way. But when we did the Green Swamp ordinance, that building was already a gas station. It was not part of our overlay. It just, we grew.
I'll check the table of uses. It would depend on what was in the overlay. I know like heavy service stations are prohibited.
Wouldn't the 7-Eleven be that?
Well, I'll look and get back with you on it. Yeah, I'll research it.
Okay. Thank you.
Buddy?
Yeah.
All right.
Good. That completes staff's presentation.
All right. This gives us our last opportunity evening for citizens' recognition. So if you've got any questions, comments about tonight's meeting or anything else came up to your mind or in your mind while we've been sitting here, please feel free to come up to the microphone. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to commissioner questions and comments. And so that would be me first. It's been a good 2 weeks. We've had a lot of things going on, very positive things with our TEDx and with the ribbon cutting and just things going on in town. I'm just real proud and pleased to see what's going on. I just take a lot of pride in when I ride around and see what we've got going on and how things have grown nicely and how people are keeping up their yards and things like that. Just, you know, it's come a long way in the 7-8 years that I've lived here in town, and I'm just pleased to see exactly what's going on with it. Ryan mentioned earlier we have the blood drive this next week, I think it is. And we've got the heritage thing going on. I do want to let you know I will be there about 10:30. I've got a meeting at 10 o'clock, and it's just to get people started. So anyway, everybody's updated on Deb. She's doing good at her second PT today, and she's feeling a little puny. She wanted to be here tonight, but she will probably make the next meeting. So that's. I'm just going to cut it short. We're going to get out of here by 9:45. So I'd like to ask Mayor Daley. Vice Mayor Daley, keep us on a roll.
I don't have much, just to let you all know that we're having our first grade field trip at the Mackay Preserve on March 11th and 12th. Used to be the first grade we could do all in one day because it was only about 74 kids, and now there's like over 150 first grade. You can see all the portables lined up there at LAE. So the kids walk over and they spend the morning learning about nature, and we have a program all set up for them. So if any of you want to come by and visit for a minute or even volunteer for the trip, Ryan volunteered when it was fun. The kids enjoy it, and it's fun.
What time is it?
It's we usually get there around 8, and the kids usually get there about 9 on the 11th and 12th. They walk over, and then they have lunch around 11:30 or so. So they bring their little bag lunches and eat lunch there, and then that's all there is.
March 11th and 12th.
And then on the same vein, on April 8th, we have a homeschool group that's coming to also do a little program field trip, which will be geared toward they're not all going to be first graders. They're going to be from all ages, but that's going to be on, I want to say April 8th. I could be a little off on that one, but it's the same group of our volunteers that are going to be putting that on. And I'm looking forward to Heritage Day this weekend, and that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Commissioner Robinson.
Good evening. Thank you. I have a my
be out of order or a little off, but I had a question about, since that bill, that homestead exemption passed the House in last month, like, do we know what percentage of our real estate is homestead exempt property and, like, how much revenue comes from that?
I mean, we could probably do a deep dive assessment on it. You know, I'm still kind of waiting, take a wait and see approach in the Senate to see if it actually makes it through. You know, we always knew the pass was going to be a pass through. They were going to vote on anything that went through it and then basically put the Senate in the position of being the break. And so that's what we're seeing happen. There's that taxation committee, though, that meets. It only gets together every 20 years, and it's supposed to convene next year. So it seems kind of odd that they would rush to put something on the ballot when there's a constitutional committee that only convenes every 20 years on revenue and taxation for the state. Why would you not have that committee take it up? So we'll see what happens, but I could very easily see the Senate punting that to that committee, especially because the governor vetoed the study that would have actually done the math behind the initiative. Because effectively, the state is flying blind on that initiative. It's pure politics. There's no talk of replacement revenue or the fallout. We could do a little bit of a deeper analysis and see what our exposure would be, but it would be catastrophic exposure. You know, in terms of if there was elimination without replacement, you know, every city would have traumatic budget impacts. In the county, too. I mean, that's why it's such a radical shift. And again, I'm not going to debate the finer points of the merits of it. There's different opinions on it. But from a purely budget perspective, there would have to be some type of replacement or offset. And we haven't seen it. We haven't seen it come from the state. But we'll do a little bit of a deeper dive. Amber and I can have that conversation and get a better gleaning. I would say for us, though, it would be significant because we're predominantly I'll call it a bedroom community. We haven't really built up our commercial or industrial core in the same way. And every city is going to be different. I would imagine our exposure would be fairly high on the ad valorem side.
It came up in a conversation over the weekend, and I was just concerned about, you know, since it was like 80-30, and my first time in this type of position, I didn't know how catastrophic it really would be, because I know we talk about budgets, and Chief just went over his plans and future, and we all want to see that happen, but, I mean, if we have to come up with another resource to replenish those funds to make that happen. That's like,
well, the state's not letting us do that because they're crimping it from all sides because they're looking at the interfund transfer from utilities, so they're cracking down on that. They're coming after the business tax receipts, so they're basically playing Jenga with all of our different revenue sources until we're totally dependent upon state revenue. And so that's what's happening. It's a concerted effort to Tallahassee's basically, you know, I don't know if you want to, I'll give my Lord of the Rings analogy, like one ring to rule them all. Like that's, they're binding all of the cities back to Tallahassee. And I think the technology is such to where they can do it. It's a big state from Pensacola to Key West. And now that the technology has improved with AI and all of these systems, I think you're going to see a consolidated effort for the Tallahassee to basically embed more in the cities. And we're already seeing it on permitting, land development. You know, the city attorney could educate us on Dillon's rule versus home rule, and that would be a nice 2-hour seminar. But I think just to kind of cover it, though, that's what you're seeing. It's just this kind of this closing of the noose, if you will, where they're kind of coming in on it. And there's just not a lot of room. And then they're also going after sovereign immunity. So they're trying to increase our liability. And it's all, I'm not saying there's some grand conspiracy. I just think it's just happening organically and incrementally over time. And the ad valorem just seems to be that's what's kind of tipping the surface. And you've all heard my rants on inflation. And that's actually what we're seeing. The discussion of property taxes isn't actually about property tax. It's a symptom of inflation and currency debasement, but people perceive it as higher taxes. Just like your house didn't actually double in value, the dollar was just cut in half. And so that's what we're seeing. And again, people are hurting. There's pain out there. I think it's a conversation that needs to be had locally and at the state level. But if they want to get away from an ad valorem paradigm, there's going to be something's going to have to replace it. In other states, they have income taxes. They have much higher sales taxes. So I've studied it a little bit. So like in Alabama and other places, property taxes might only be one quarter of what they are here, because we tend to average around 2% of your assessed value in property taxes. If you look at other states, they might only have a 0.5% or 1%, but then they've got 10, 11% sales tax, and they've got local sales tax too, or they've got 5%+ income tax. So it's just a question of what's the best way to field the team, so to speak? And I think that's the conversation that has to have at the state level, because you can't say no income tax, low sales tax, and no property tax and have it work, because the end result will be public services will get gutted, and then everyone will be in private communities, and CDDs will effectively replace government. Is local government would be the long-term effect of what you would see. And it wouldn't happen overnight. It would happen 20, 30, 30 years from now, just as the service base was eroded. I don't know if I meant to go on that tangent, Commissioner Robinson, no. But it's a fascinating topic, and I think a detailed conversation, and we need to continue to have it with our state legislatures. And if there's a super, I think the League of Cities is promoting like a percentage-based exemption across the state of Florida, as an alternative, and if they punt this to that 2027 committee, I think they need to look at all options, on the table. So,
okay. Thank you.
I've always said also, and just to dovetail, there's always red herrings when you're looking at these bill summaries, and there's probably 3,000 to 4,000 bills that get introduced each session. So only a small percentage of those bills actually make it through the House, Senate, and to the governor's desk for veto or for it to become or signed into law. Now, the ad valorem tax doesn't bother me as much this session as it would next session. I'm not saying that there's no potential that it could be passed, but I also wouldn't recommend that you lose much sleep over proposed legislation until it actually becomes law. What's more concerning to me this session is the sovereign immunity caps. That is just a slow erosion of home rule. As you raise those caps, you make it more difficult for smaller jurisdictions to become insured for liability purposes, and it also will increase litigation on municipalities. And so what will end up ultimately happening is you'll be self-insured, and then what happens if you have a big lawsuit? Mm-hmm. Now you become an agency of the county best case scenario, right? So you have to kind of weed through it a little bit, but the best practice I've adopted over the last 15 years is I wait until the very end, and then I binge read it to see what actually is, becomes law. Because if you had to read 4,000 bills, you'd be an expert at nothing because most of them don't make it through. I'm not trying to be rude or curt. I'm just saying as you do this more and more, you'll see. I mean, there's 4,000 bills that are going through and, we're going to get rid of, all taxation. No, that bill's never going to make it, right? But as the manager was stating, if there's a committee or a subcommittee that is convening constitutionally next year, that would be a year that I would watch very closely what happens with that bill.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, so that's what we talked about. There's another one that convenes every 10 years, and that's for the Constitution. And then this is, it's every 20 years, and it literally forms next year. So it's kind of a tough narrative to say, let's just make this the biggest change we've ever made with taxes, and we're not going to kick it to the committee that actually handles it. So we'll see what happens, but we'll do the research on our own and just see what our exposure would be, and I'll put that in a future update to the commission.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I appreciate the city and the staff for the upcoming events and the past events that I was able to attend, and look forward to continue to manage the growth that's coming through the city of Lake Alfred.
So thank you.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Eden.
Thank you, Mayor. As always, I want to thank both chiefs in the back. You guys know I'm always for you. And all the first responders, all the staff. Thank both presentations today. I had the honor of going to, before this meeting, my daughter had a National Honor Society, so I had the honor of doing that. And I'm sure all the children in the first couple rows here, I'm sure those, you guys are all smart and a part of that. So I had the honor of doing that. And I just wanted to echo, I'm going to keep this moving just like everybody else, just wanted to echo the pastor's comments earlier just about praying for all the armed forces and everybody, our police forces, all the first responders just around, not just in the U.S., but around the world. So thank you.
Okay. And Commissioner Dierman, close us out.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just want to thank the audience tonight that came out. The gentlemen, you are right on what we do get some bad raps, and it's kind of part of it, but we love citizens that come forward. I'm doing a PSA tonight, and of course it came up quick and I didn't know it, but daylight savings time is this weekend.
What?
Yes.
What day?
Sunday. March 8th. So it's spring forward, so you move it up. Sunday night. Or Saturday night, Sunday morning. Right.
It's always
Saturday night. Exactly. So, and that's all, man. Thank you. All
right. One last thing I reminded myself, 9:56 tonight, there's a launch from Cape Kennedy. And so you. There was one, Jack's out. I didn't see it last night. And then Blood Moon tonight, or in the morning, early. And 6:04 to 6:33 would be the most visible time here. So it's just something to kind of keep in mind. I'm always up about that time in the morning. So me and the dogs will go out and look at it. The Blood Moon is 6:04 to 6:33. Yeah, boy, you see it tonight is a beautiful full moon. So anyway, thank you so much for another great meeting. It's always good to see smiling faces and the fact that you know you can always come up here if you've got questions or problems or whatever, and they typically get taken care of pretty quickly. So thanks again for everybody, and have a good evening, and I'll clock us out of here.
And for those